The archaeologists Jonathan Haas and Winifred Kramer took me to Caballete, a narrow, dusty bowl, perhaps half a mile long and a quarter mile wide, a few miles up the Fortaleza River, a couple hours north of Lima on the Peruvian coast. At the mouth of the bowl were three mounds in a rough semicircle that faced a fourth mound. In front of one mound, like a 1/8 scale model of Stonehenge, was a ragged circle of huacas, sacred stones. Not far from the huacas, looters had dug up an ancient graveyard, pulling out the bodies and unwinding them from their sheets in a search for gold and jewels. When they didn't find any, they threw the bones down in disgust. In a square perhaps 50 yards on a side, the ground was carpeted with broken human bones and scraps of 1,000-year-old fabric. We walked a little further and were greeted by a curious sight. Skulls from the cemetery gathered into several small piles. Around them were beer cans, cigarette butts, patent medicine bottles, half-burned photographs, and candles shaped like naked women. These last had voodoo pins stuck in their heads and vaginas. Local people came to these places at night and either dug for treasure or practiced witchcraft, Haas said. In the harsh afternoon light, they seemed to me tacky and sad. I imagined that the families of the people who had been buried at Caballete so long ago would have been outraged if they could have known what would happen to the bodies of their loved ones. But then it occurred to me that my views may not have been shared by either the present or the past inhabitants of the Peruvian coast. I had no idea what people in Huari or Chimor would have thought of the scene before me. So far in this section, I have mainly described the economic and political history of Andean Indians. But people live also in the realm of the affective and aesthetic. That's why they bury bodies and sometimes dig them up and pour love potions on them. Despite all the knowledge gained by scientists in the last few decades, this emotional realm remains much harder to reach. An obvious example on the southern coast is the Nazca, famous for the huge patterns they set into the ground. Figures of animals and plants, almost 1,000 geometric symbols, arrow straight lines many miles long, what were they for? Peruvian anthropologist Toribio Mejia Quispe first brought these famous drawings to the attention of the outside world in 1927. 4 decades later, the Swiss writer Erich von Däniken set off an international furor by claiming that the Nazca Indians could not have made these symbols because they were too big for such primitive people to construct, and because they are visible only from the air. Instead, he said, the giant figures were landing signals for space travelers. The whole plain was a sort of gigantic extraterrestrial airport. Expanded in a series of best-selling books, this notion turned the lines into a major tourist attraction. Exasperated scientists pointed out that A, small groups could have constructed the images by moving the dark surface stone to expose the lighter-colored earth beneath, and B, the Nazca did not have to see the figures to experience them, for they can be understood by walking the lines, which it is believed the Indians did. The prevailing theory today is that the straight lines mapped out the area's many underground faults, which channel water. But nobody knows why the Nazca made the animal and plant figures, which seem less likely to have a direct function. What were the Nazca thinking as they created them? How did they feel when they walked them? To this day, the answers remain frustratingly far away. Or consider the Moche, leaders of a military state that overran much of the northern coast, submerging the identities of its victims in its own.